to Safe and Sound, New Zealand's only animal rights radio program, broadcasting from Free FM 89.0 and from access stations right across the country. My name's Sandra Kyle, and I'd like to warmly welcome you all. We have a real treat for you today, because I chat with a very special man. His name is Pete Crosby. Pete runs the Willowite Animal Sanctuary in Freshwater Creek, Victoria, and has a big following on Facebook because of his very moving chronicles of the lives and deaths of his animal charges. They're mainly rescued farm animals, sheep, cows, goats, pigs, roosters, hens. And it's very moving to hear Pete talk about his love and respect for them as individuals. I was particularly affected when talking to Pete to hear how early on he found a sheep who'd been left for dead in a paddock. The farmer had covered her with lime to help prevent disease, and she'd had an eye pecked out by crows, but she was still hanging on to life. This sheep was given the name Beauty, and I hope you enjoy hearing her story as well as the other stories Pete shared with me. Pete, I have a friend who also has a sanctuary. She has a rooster sanctuary outside of Auckland. She's a big fan of yours, and when I told her I was interviewing you, she said, well, if I met him, I would kiss his feet.
That's wonderful. I had a lot of time for roosters. They, well, through no fault of their own, they're often unwanted, and it's really difficult for people to find homes for them. I have 90 roosters here. And it's,
oh, my goodness me.
It's always a wonderful wake-up call at about 4:30 every morning.
I was going to say 90 times 90.
Well, we share a home with 90. Mm.
I think a lot of people are not aware that, what is it, 90-something percent of roosters never see the light of day.
Yeah, that would be the case, because most people that have chickens only want one rooster, and certainly in the egg industry, half, of course, of all chickens born in the egg industry are male, and they're just killed on day one or day two, because clearly they don't produce eggs. And I've got a few friends involved in animal activism here, and in Bendigo, a couple of hours from here, about 6 months ago, there was an action there where they were demonstrating and were arrested and removed from an egg hatchery where the male chicks were on the conveyor belt to be ground alive on the macerator, is the name of the machine. It's 1 day old. And they managed to shove about 130 of them in their pockets and up their jumpers as they were leaving, and 12 of those little boys came here. I'm looking out the window now, seeing them wandering around the yard. So some of them had a lucky escape. But a rooster's life is hard, but it's the roosters, through no fault of their own, don't get a chance. It's sort of like male dairy cows. Most of them are slaughtered in the first week
Bobby
of life
cubs,
as
yes.
well. It's a terrible situation.
Let's just start at the beginning. Tell us how Willowite started. I noticed that on your Facebook page you say that the sanctuary exists to tell the stories of the gentle creatures who live with you.
Yeah, we moved out to the country, my wife and youngest daughter and I, 10 years ago from Geelong, about half an hour away, and we really just wanted to move out to the country for the experience, but also to be nearer Jeanette's ailing father, who has passed since then, but lived fairly close to here. And we, in the first winter, with him being here a couple of months, we saw lambs dead or dying in paddocks, being born in the freezing cold and the rain, with no shelter, and that's pretty normal for the sheep industry here, and I imagine in many parts of the world as well. Farmers don't think that it's economical to either have sheep inside when they're lambing or have shelter for them apart from a few trees. So we started seeing lambs in trouble, and regularly I would just jump the fence, and if there was a lamb alone with no mother anywhere or near death, then I would simply take the lamb and see if I could revive him or her, and started from there. Then people started knowing that we were taking in some animals and would contact us. We didn't really want to start an animal sanctuary, but as we became vegan, which was about the same time, we just researched more about the animal agriculture industry in general and decided that we could do something more than simply being vegan ourselves, that we could save some animals. But for me, much more importantly, the reason Willowite's here is so that I can share the stories of those animals and try and help people see animals as they are. And for me, it's as simple as if an animal wants to exist and you don't need to kill that animal to survive yourself, then that animal should be able to be free to exist.
To be lived,
so telling the tales of the animals is so important to me here. To me, a chicken and a dog and a cat and a pig and a goat and a cow, they're no different, for that matter, a human as well. And we all have the same right to live free from violence and exploitation. So Willowite Animal Sanctuary came into existence for that reason, to save a few animals, but to, more importantly, tell their tale.
Yes. We tend to think that there's a big difference between our domesticated animals and farm animals, pigs and chickens and roosters and sheep and goats and cows. But, of course, there is no real difference. We've all got spleens, haven't we? We've all got rods and cones in our eyes. We all feel pain. And we all have emotions and have preferences. We want to live. We want to be free. We want to stay with our families and so on.
Absolutely. Not only when you live with animals, but when you do have the opportunity and the honour, I think, to live with those species, then you appreciate the gentle beauty and the so much that we can learn from them. They don't spend their days worrying about tomorrow, and they make friendships, as you say, and they have different personalities, every single one of them. And we're simply a mammal, the same as them. It's just that we've developed skills and tools. We've got intelligence and a large brain, but along with that evolution and that development, somewhere along the way, we've lost track of what's important and feel that it's somehow okay to use other species in a terrible way. The animal agriculture industry and the way that, wearing their skin and using them for entertainment and medical testing and eating them. 60 billion land animals per year are killed for food. And I'm a nurse. I've been in the medical profession for 40 years. My wife's a nurse. And I've been a vegan for 10 years and a vegetarian for 20 years before that, and I know that nobody needs to eat animal products to be healthy. In fact, the opposite is true. So there's absolutely no difference in my perspective, in my mind, between any of those animals that you mentioned. They all want to live. It's as simple as that.
Of course they do. And veganism is a win-win situation. Can I just ask about those lambs that you initially rescued? Are they still going?
Many die. There's 150 mammals here, but we probably have rescued double or more than double that number. Some animals are already home, but most of the 80 sheep that are here with me now are ones that we've rescued from situations like that over the years. And it's been 10 years, so some of them have almost lived out their life. But the very first sheep, Rose, who I can see out the kitchen window now, walking around in a paddock, is still with us.
She must think that she has a sense of entitlement, I'd say, Rose. Do you? Being
so.
The first one.
She has an arrogance about her that most other sheep don't have, and I think that's probably just because she's been here such a long time. But it's, she's not nasty. Living with, there's pigs, donkeys, goats, cows, horses, sheep.
Right.
Many animals here, and none of them display any nasty characteristics at all. That's one of the lessons that I take from the animals. They just want to survive, and they just want to have friends of their own species and not be hurt. So, but she has earned the respect of the others.
Right.
The matriarch.
So you mentioned that you and your wife are nurses, and you've got this big sanctuary as well. Presumably you have volunteers and other people to help you on the farm.
Yeah, we do. We've been running Willowite pretty much on our own and having fairly regular volunteer days or working bees over the years. Things have changed a little in the last 6 months. I'm here by myself now, but still get help from volunteers. We also have school groups and groups that come through, and sometimes some school groups will organise in advance to come and do some work. There's a lot of work to do here, but more importantly, when groups or when people come here, the purpose of in my mind, the reason that I let them come and encourage people to come is so that they can experience the animals. Most people have this disconnect between the packet of meat, for example, that they buy from the supermarket and the gentle creature that comes up to them and says hello in a paddock.
Yes.
It's the same animal. Most people don't get to experience that. So hopefully, in my mind, that experience will trigger something to start people thinking in their minds. Maybe it might take a long time, but I know when we went to Edgar's Mission many years ago and met the animals there when we first moved out. We also got some information about veganism, and that was the first time that I had learned the truth about, for example, the dairy industry with male calves being slaughtered in their first week of life, the chicken industry with the half of the males being killed and the conditions that the hens that survive live in. And it was pretty clear to me that veganism was a really important social justice
movement
matter rather than a food choice.
Yes.
And so I'd love the world to be vegan, and that I'm pretty sure that will happen one day, but it will take work by people who do see animals in a different light to educate others. So the most important aspect of Willow One Animal Sanctuary is to educate others about animals and in particular veganism.
I personally think that things are definitely changing. It's almost like a zeitgeist. It's the spirit of the times. And even this radio program, it's been taken up now by just about every radio station in the access sector in New Zealand. There is a growing awareness about animals and our relationships with them. And of course, as a result of that, killing them and eating them. One of the things I do on a Friday when I come into Hamilton is stand outside a slaughterhouse for anything up to about an hour with my signs, and I just stand silently outside the slaughterhouse, and sometimes if I'm there an hour, sometimes 1,000 cars will go by in each direction.
Yeah.
So that's actually a good outreach too. So we do what we can to help people to think about where their food.
Yeah, the world
comes
is changing.
And, it's
and
definitely.
I honestly, when I was first vegan, I was angry and I thought, why can't people see what I can see? And, and I've grown older, but I've grown a little wiser over the years as well. And I honestly believe that people are good inside. People don't want to hurt others.
Of course
and
they don't.
Most people, if you ask them the question, do you think it's right to hurt animals unnecessarily, will say no, but have this disconnect between that belief and the animal that's on their plate in the evening. I don't have any animosity towards people who aren't vegan.
No.
It's exactly where I was in the past.
That's right.
The role of Willow White just to help people make that connection. But I guess I'm involved in the vegan world and the animal activist community, and so I'm immersed in that all of the time. But I really believe that people are changing. The reason is not just the ethical reason behind not hurting anybody else if you don't have to. There's incredibly important environmental issues that can be addressed by looking closely at the animal agriculture industry, and do we need it at all, and the effects that will make on resources in the world, pollution, global warming. They're all incredibly important issues that veganism has a large role to play when we reduce our dependence and our abuse, in fact, of animals.
But the beauty of your work is that you really do reach out to minds and hearts. I first became aware of you probably about a year ago. Your Facebook site was recommended, and I saw these gorgeous photos of sheep or cows or goats, llamas, animals that had passed, and you photographed them and you put flowers in the photo and you wrote a little eulogy for them, and it was just so moving. Tell us a little bit about why you decided to share the photographs of your animals.
Well, to me, when we lose an animal, it's tragic, especially if he or she is a young animal that might have been rescued and got a chance but then didn't make it for whatever reason. And some of them are animals that I might find that have been in terrible situations and bring them here and try and save them, and it doesn't work. So if they die alone, then it's a tragedy. But if they die alone and nobody knows their tale, and I don't do something about stopping it happening in the future, then I feel that I've let them down. There was a lamb in a paddock probably 2 years ago. I was driving along near here one day, and there was there was a sheep in a paddock and was covered in some white powder and apparently lifeless. And I jumped the fence and went over, and this sheep was dead and had been dead for quite a while. And the farmer had thrown lime powder on the body to reduce bacteria. I think that's why. And it's used sometimes in burials in graves to put lime in to lessen the chance of disease. And as I was walking back to my ute, I saw another sheep not that far away under some bushes covered in lime as well. And I went over and walked past, and I saw her slightly move as I walked past, and she, I try not to cry, but I saw that she was alive, and she was covered in lime, and had lime in her eyes and her face. One eye had been pecked out by crows, probably, yet she was still alive. And I picked her up and carried her over the fence and put her in the back of my ute and went straight to my vet, who was only a few miles from there, with the intention probably that he would euthanize her at least and put her out of her misery, but also that he would be able to verify that this had happened. The guy had done that without checking to see if she, hadn't even bothered to check to see if she was alive, or in fact knew that she was sick and just did it anyway. We tried to keep her alive, gave her an IV and antibiotics and pain relief, and I brought her home, and she died later that night, probably 5 hours later. But she was by the fire with blankets. She was in no pain, and I cleaned her up. I called her Beauty. I buried her the next day, but with respect. And I often say to people that that lose animals that they are loved, that they are grieved, and that their passing is marked. And that's enough. That will be enough for me when I leave. And if I can pass that on to an animal, then I see it as my duty. But the stories then, that story was in the local newspapers, and I shared it on Facebook, and there were in fact thousands of shares.
Yes.
And while any act of animal cruelty usually brings compassion into people's minds and into their hearts, they don't necessarily
make that
connection between the overall use of animals and that particular act. So it's really important to me that I always tell people that that stopping the cruelty completely, and that means veganism, to me, is far more effective than campaigning against conditions of animals, conditions of sheep in a paddock in a winter's night. They're having their lambs in the cold and the rain. That's not the issue. The fact that we've got them there at all is the issue. So whenever I post about animals who died, even as recently as last week, there are little creatures here who have died that have touched me so deeply, but I share their stories with respect. And I always get contacted fairly soon afterwards by people who have been touched by their stories and have, that they're starting to think of animals on a different level rather than there's a dead sheep in a paddock. No, as you said before, that sheep had friends and had family and had wants, made relationships, felt pain, felt fear, felt joy on a spring day when the grass is green. They have very different lives to us, and we don't understand them that well, but we can at least respect them.
Yes. The farmer may think of sheep as a commodity, and that kind of is exactly the opposite of what you're doing. Your animals are individuals over everything else, and loved and respected. So I think that just displaying that and offering your point of view and expressing it so beautifully with photos and your writings, then it can't fail. You know, I'm sure there are farmers out there who have looked at their animals in a different way because of your work.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm not against farmers. I understand many people for generations have lived on the land and have raised and bred, whether it's cows or sheep, and don't really know any other way of life. And to them, it's perfectly natural, just as it's perfectly natural for most people to eat meat or milk or eggs as part of their normal diet. But as time goes on, more and more people are making the decision that it's so easy not to do that, and so easy not to support that. And it would take time. A common argument people present to me is, well, you know, what would the farmers do? And what would we do with all of those billions of animals in the paddocks now? Do we just let them starve and multiply or what? And it's all of those answers, all of those questions are answered easily if you understand that it will take time to transition from an animal agriculture industry to a plant-based agriculture industry. One acre of land growing soybeans can sustain 100 people, but that the same acre of land growing cows can sustain 3 people. So into the future, there's going to be much more pressing reasons why we're looking for alternatives to use our resources better. But for me, as you said, every one of those is an individual. It's not that we would have billions of animals to try and home or look after. Those animals wouldn't exist. We'd stop breeding because there would be no need. In 1 year, we would have far fewer than the previous year. And in a very short time, we would only have animals that are here for their own purposes rather than our purpose.
Talking about individuals, I'm just thinking about, what are some of the names of your animals? I know you've got How Now, who happens to be a brown cow, and you've got Hermione and Henrietta, and how do you go about naming?
It's difficult. Some years we struggle. We usually take in probably a dozen lambs a year, and last year all the lambs that came here were named after Game of Thrones characters, and some years we might name them after one letter of the alphabet, and sometimes their names are just from their personalities and that you can see fairly early on. But it's hard to keep up finding names. How Now was easy. But some of them, you just look at them and we had a little female dairy cow called Tinkerbell, and she was tiny and beautiful and was marked for slaughter because she was too small. She wouldn't produce enough milk, and Tinkerbell just seemed to fit her. It is hard finding the names sometimes, but they help you.
I imagine that your profession as a nurse, it comes in very handy when your animal gets sick or something, and you also got some knowledge. Your work with sick people has made you more compassionate, perhaps, towards sick animals. Do you find that there's an overlap between your job as a nurse and your farm work?
Yeah, absolutely. In the last year, I've started working as a practice nurse in a large GP clinic, and so the compassionate side of my nursing career has moved forward. I spent 20-odd years working at an aluminium factory near Geelong as an occupational health nurse, so it was more doing medicals and emergency response and things like that. But being in the medical profession certainly makes a big difference. Our vet bills early on used to be really high, and these days it's partly having medical knowledge, but it's partly experience. We raised so many little lambs and are experienced with problems like bloat that they might suffer, and probably more so than most vets, because if there's a calf or a lamb who's desperately ill in a paddock, it's usually not worth the farmer's while and money in their mind to spend a couple of $100 on a vet bill for an animal that they might only value at $20 or $30 or $40. So we now stock our own antibiotics and painkillers and IV fluids, and we can manage most animals ourselves without using a vet. Just if they need surgery or sometimes euthanasia, that we'll call our vet in. So it's probably only a couple of times a year now, whereas it was much more common. And knowledge of human conditions absolutely makes a big difference. Some of the broiler hens and roosters that we've had over the years, broiler chickens are bred really large and have huge muscle structure by the age of 6 weeks when they're normally killed. And if you rescue some of those roosters or hens, they often suffer from heart failure before they're 12 months old, and they rarely live beyond 1.5 or 2. Bertie's a broiler rooster who came to me this morning, in fact, from a friend in Melbourne who's in Chook Shed at the moment, and he's 15 months and he's doing really well and not showing any great problems. He's still mobile, but their little bodies can't sustain the mass of their muscle, and their hearts often suffer. So a couple of years ago, when we first started having some broiler roosters, Homer, one of ours here, started having trouble breathing and gurgling and coughing and having a moist chest. And from my medical experience, I knew that he was suffering from heart failure, and asked our vet if they could work out what would be a suitable dose and if they could give me a prescription for fluid tablets, for Lasix, and for digoxin to strengthen his heart. He'd never heard that before, but was happy to make some inquiries. And so we started him on that medication. And he lived for about another 6 months, but quite happily. It certainly helped his condition. Having some medical knowledge for humans transposes very often into the animal world, so that we can help them.
That's just about our time, but it's been wonderful having you as our guest, and I just hope you look after yourself well, because there must be so many demands on your physical and also your emotional energy, and so hopefully you know how to look after yourself well.
I'm lucky I'm still physically well and active. I'm 60 now, and still I work 4 days a week and enjoy good health. Well, I think being a vegan helps a lot.
I think so too.
But I think emotionally, you're absolutely right, that people that work in animal activism or work with animals,
they can get burnt out.
They're involved in animal rights, see the horrors lot. We lose, you know, the animals that we lose here over the years affected me, and I was really struggling last year, not really understanding what had happened. But it's similar to post-traumatic stress disorder that many people experience when they're involved in protesting or animal activism. So yeah, it's important to be aware of that and to seek help from others and also pace yourself and avoid being burned out. Yeah, mentally it can be incredibly challenging.
Yes.
So we do have to protect ourselves from that, otherwise you won't be effective into the future. But as time goes on, I'm incredibly hopeful the world will change. We won't have the need for sanctuaries. I often talk about if every vegan can educate and convince one other person to be vegan each year, and that person then does the same, in 6 years, the entire planet will be vegan. So that's my optimistic hope for the future, that one day we won't need animal sanctuaries, because they're not the answer, but so a place of recharging and resting, if you like, for people involved in that lifestyle to be able to come and spend time with the gentle creatures and stay away from horrors a little bit, as well as education. So it's important that we keep doing this work.
Definitely. But your estimate of 6 years, I think, will be about right. We're beginning to eschew animal agriculture. We're at the beginning of the wave, if you like. But 6 to 10 years, I also think that that will be about the timeline. But we'll wait and see.
Yes. it is optimistic. But there becomes a tipping time in social justice movement.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yes,
social justice movement of our time, where when you get to 10 to 20% of people changing, the rest
and
happens pretty quickly because it becomes much more important.
Absolutely,
I think that's really encouraging.
So we're optimistic then, Pete.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's wonderful. You take care, and I'll give your best regards to Kat Worsfold.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pete. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Our grateful thanks to Pete Crosby. If you'd like to follow Pete too, his Facebook pages are Pete Crosby and Willow White Animal Sanctuary. And you might want to check out the Roost Facebook page, which is Kat Worsfold's Rooster Sanctuary. She does a great job there also with her roosters and other animals. So our own Facebook page is Safe and Sound Radio Show and Podcast. And if you would like it, then it would be great. You can go to our page to hear past podcasts or add any comments if you feel so inclined. We're in the midst of creating our own website, and it will be much easier then to retrieve past podcasts when we've got that up and running. So until next time, take care everyone, keep warm and dry. See you next week.